Stoner's expression hardened. You were a prisoner under interrogation when I took you out of there.
Yes, I know. But the Archbishop will want to see me now, I'm sure. I have a lot to tell him.
All right, Stoner said slowly. I'll take you back after I put Yolanda here on the rocket for Cellini.
You don't have to do that. I won't tell them about her and her scrapbook.
Vasquez's chin lifted a notch at the mention of her scrapbook. I didn't think you would, Angelique, Stoner half-lied. I just think it would be better if I went with you.
No need for that, Angelique said flatly. I can get back to the New Morality headquarters by myself. I won't need any help from you.
Stoner felt some misgivings as he waited outside the motel's lobby with Angelique for the auto taxi she had phoned for. It was a cloudy morning, chill and threatening rain. You're sure this is what you want to do? He asked her.
Positive, she snapped.
They didn't treat you all that well yesterday.
It's different now.
Stoner watched her intently. He saw anger in her sculpted face, the anger of rejection, and he heard his wife telling him,
She's in love with you, Keith, and you rejected her.
She doesn't have any romantic feelings for me, he replied. It's power that she's after. He could sense Joe shaking her head.
After all these years, you still don't understand, do you?
Understand what? He asked.
Women. Human emotions. She wants power, yes, certainly. But she's in love with you, which makes her dangerous.
If it's power she's after, why does she want to go back to Overmyer?
Because if she can't have you, she'll go to the next most powerful man she knows.
But why?
To tell him how to get rid of you, Joe said coldly.
Stoner felt some surprise at that. Get rid of me?
She can't have you for herself, so she's going to do her damnedest to make certain no one else gets you.
He finally understood. She wants to help Overmyer get rid of me. That's good, then.
That's good?
Yes. It means she doesn't want to help Overmyer learn how to use me for his own benefit.
His own benefit? Joe scoffed. The man runs all of North America and has his tentacles stretched across the world. He doesn't need you.
Yes, but he needs to make certain I don't threaten his power.
Power,
Joe said silently, and Stoner could sense the loathing in her thoughts.
It's all about power, isn't it?
It's always about power, he said. Once Angelique ducked into the auto taxi and headed back toward Atlanta, Stoner returned to Yolanda Vasquez's motel room. The old woman was sitting in her power chair, looking fresh and vigorous, her wispy white hair glistening from her shower. She clutched the scrapbook to her frail chest.
You read my scrapbook, didn't you?
She said as soon as he closed the door. She didn't look angry or even disappointed, Stoner thought. Yes, we did.
I meant those writings for my great-grandniece, up in the Rockrat's habitat at Ceres.
I apologize for intruding on your privacy, he said. But what you wrote was very enlightening to me. I was having a difficult time understanding how a democracy can slide into virtual dictatorship.
Nothing virtual about it, Vasquez said. You'll find out when you try to get me through the spaceport.
Hartsfield Aerospaceport was immense, thundering with the constant roar of jet airliners and rocket vehicles landing and taking off. Stoner parked the rented sports sedan at the terminal's curb, then pulled Vasquez's power chair out of the trunk, unfolded it, and helped her settle into it comfortably. A police robot trundled up to them.
No parking or waiting is allowed at curbside, sir.
Yes, I know, said Stoner.
Vehicles left unattended will be towed, said the robot's synthesized voice.
Stoner smiled at the stubby little machine, even though he knew it was not programmed to recognize facial expressions. All it knew was the parking regulations and violations thereof. Let's go, he said to Vasquez. She gave him a questioning look.
Vehicles left unattended will be towed, the robot repeated.
Somehow it sounded annoyed. To Vasquez, Stoner said, They'll tow the car and eventually return it to the rental company. They'll be glad to get it back. He grinned down at her. Although I imagine there'll be some head-scratching over the time their car's been away. Vasquez chuckled as she toggled the power chair into the terminal. Walking alongside her,
Stoner thought she looked much stronger than she had the day before. The nanomachines had rebuilt her heart and were now going through her system searching for other needed repairs. Vasquez kept her mouth shut and let Stoner do all the talking as they moved from ticket counter to security inspection and finally to the terminal gate where the moonbound rocket launcher sat on its tail, a squat truncated cone built of pure diamond in Cellini's lunar manufacturing centers. He walked her into the clipper ship's passenger compartment and watched her switch from the power chair to an aisle seat without any assistance from him. "I'll have the flight attendants stow your chair for you," he said, leaning over her, "although I don't think you'll need it once you're on the moon." Vasquez looked up at him, suddenly troubled.
"But what'll I do once I'm there? I don't have any money, no pension, nothing."
Stoner said, "Stavanger told me they need elementary school teachers."
"They do."
"Cellini's population is growing and they have more children than they can deal with. They need school teachers, nurses, daycare people. Governments here on Earth make it tough for their citizens to emigrate to Cellini. There's even a shortage of babysitters, from what he tells me." Vasquez stared up at him.
"Really?"
"Really." She blinked tears away, then suddenly wrapped her thin arms around Stoner's neck.
"Thank you,"
she whispered into his ear.
"Thank you for getting me out of this prison."
Chapter 11. Angelique felt almost as powerful as Stoner himself as she made her way through the security guards at the New Morality's headquarters complex. When she left the auto taxi at the complex's main gate, the guards on duty directed her to the small, low-roofed building marked Visitor's Entrance. It was a security checkpoint, of course. The young, bushy-haired guard at the desk just inside the door grinned up at the sight of the slim, beautiful young woman, despite her dark religious garb. But his grin faded as she presented her ID chip, and he looked up her official dossier. "Attached to the Archbishop's staff," he muttered, looking at her with new respect. Then the computer beeped, and he returned his attention to the screen. "Hold on," he said, his expression changing again. Now he looked suspicious. While Angelique fidgeted impatiently before his desk, the guard turned in his wheeled chair toward the open doorway that led deeper into the building and called, "Captain, you better look at this." The guard captain came up, a wiry, sandy-haired man in his 30s. His uniform bristled with merit decorations and award ribbons. The hash marks on his sleeves showed he had been in the security forces since he was a teenager. Bending over the younger guard's shoulder, he said crisply to the computer, "Display security specification." The two men read the screen, then looked at each other. The captain straightened and said, "Sister Angelique, we're instructed to take you directly to Archbishop Overmyer." Angelique let out a breath that she hadn't realized she'd been holding.
"That's fine," she said softly. "That's perfect."
Two uniformed security guards drove Angelique in a quiet, unmarked electric minivan to the Archbishop's vicarage. They went with her as one of the female staff workers led them to a small conference room off the Archbishop's office. The woman ushered Angelique inside and instructed her to wait.
"It may be a little while," she said sweetly in a semi-whisper. "The Archbishop is a very busy man."
Angelique nodded and sat in one of the padded swivel chairs that lined the oval conference table. The woman left the room and closed the door. Angelique didn't hear a lock click, but she thought that her two security escorts were probably stationed on the other side of the door. The room was austere, blank wall screens, the polished conference table and its set of eight chairs, nothing more. Angelique resigned herself to wait. But as she sank back into the chair, she suddenly thought that Dr. Mayfair or one of the other inquisitors might come through that door and drag her back down to that interrogation room again. No, she told herself, they wouldn't. But still she trembled. For more than half an hour she waited, rehearsing in her mind what she would tell the Archbishop. Get rid of Stoner. Get him out of the picture. Make him... One of the wall screens slid aside, and Archbishop Overmyer stepped ponderously into the conference room, his fleshy face set in a suspicious scowl. Angelique rose to her feet as the Archbishop settled his bulk into the chair at the head of the table, then motioned with one hand for her to sit down.
"You got away from him?" Overmyer asked without preamble.
"He let me go," said Angelique.
His only interest